Translation. King Prithu was dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Ahoksaja. Because King Prithu performed so many sacrifices, he was superhumanly enhanced by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. King Prithu's opulence, however, could not be tolerated by the King of Heaven, Indra, who tried to impede the progress of his opulence. Okay, purport. In this verse, there are three significant purposes expressed in the words Ahoksaja, Bhagavan Indra, and Prithu. Mars Prithu is an incarnation of Vishnu, yet he is a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Although an empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he is nonetheless a living entity. As such, he must be a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is an incarnation, he should not forget his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Kali Yuga, there are many self-made incarnations, rascals, who declare themselves to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Bhagavan Indra indicate that a living entity can be, or can even be, as exalted and powerful as King Indra. For even King Indra is an ordinary living entity in the material world and possesses the four defects of the conditioned soul. King Indra is described herein as Bhagavan, which is generally used in reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this case, however, King Indra is addressed as Bhagavan because he has so much power in his hands. Despite his becoming Bhagavan, he is envious of the incarnation of God, Prithu Maharaj. The defects of material life were so strong that due to contamination, King Indra became envious of an incarnation of God. We should try to understand, therefore, how a conditioned soul becomes fallen. The opulence of King Prithu was not dependent on material conditions. As described in this verse, he was a great devotee of Ahoksaja. The word Ahoksaja indicates the personality of Godhead, who is beyond the expression of mind and words. However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears before the devotee in his original form of eternal bliss and knowledge. The devotee is allowed to see the Supreme Lord face to face. Although the Lord is beyond the expression of our senses and beyond our direct perception. Wow. Om Gyana Timaranda Shah Gananjana Sulakaya Chakshusun Munitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manubhiskam Slavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Guru Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the verse again. King Prithu was dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Ahoksaja. Because King Prithu performed so many sacrifices, he was superhumanly enhanced by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. King Prithu's opulence, however, could not be tolerated by the King of Heaven, Indra, who tried to impede the progress of his opulence. So I was thinking of a word to kind of represent the class today, and I was thinking there could be so many words we could talk with to say Bhagavan, because actually here Bhagavan is referring not only to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but to even a living entity like King Indra. Or we could talk about here mentioned, we could talk about Ahoksaja, who is a Supreme Lord, is beyond what we can express, you know, or even become aware of in our mind. You know, so, you know, Ahoksaja could be another word, which is amazing. Or we could even talk, we could have it about envy. We could talk about envy, which is a very, you know, contaminating quality that we have, you know, which represents all the vices, practically lust, anger, greed, illusion, all these things. It's like the epitome of all these, and it's the worst of all those six enemies. And so there is, yeah, we have that. And this, because of envy, we've actually come to this material world. So if you're envious, you're in the material world. If you're not envious, you're actually in the spiritual world, even if you're in this material body. And we could talk about how we could become fallen. There's so many points you probably brought up in this purport. It's amazing. We have to understand, he says, how a conditioned soul becomes fallen. And then, to top it all off, how even the Lord is at Hoksha, even though you know we can't describe him or see him with our mind, he's beyond this material world. We can actually see, the devotee is allowed to see the Lord face to face. So it's amazing. So there's so many topics we could go into. So I just kind of like, I'll probably be covering most of these things I mentioned, but we probably won't be able to get to all of them because there's so much nectar here. So we'll just gradually go along and see how we go. So as far as this becoming conditioned, there's a nice letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Chaturbhuja when he was in Los Angeles in 1973. And it's very nice. He brought up so many nice points because he must have really asked some really nice questions. And there's like five or six questions that he asked Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada very nicely, very patiently, just really nicely answered these questions. So I'm just going to answer a few of these questions. And this will kind of give us an idea of some of the questions that are brought up or some of the topics brought up in the purport. So Prabhupada says, your second question, how does it become conditioned when the jivatma is eternally full of bliss and knowledge? So the answer is that it is not the soul itself that becomes mixed with matter, but it is his consciousness that becomes absorbed in trying to enjoy the matter. Out of desire to lord it over, the jiva, soul, forgets that he is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, and identifies with the material energy. So it is the consciousness of the conditioned soul that is affected. So just see, this is why Srila Prabhupada started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So that we're actually full of bliss and knowledge, and the soul doesn't become mixed with matter, but it's our consciousness that does. So this is the whole process, is that we have to purify that consciousness. So then his fifth question is, Bhagavad Gita says that the conditioned soul is subject to four defects, which Prabhupada brought up in the purport. Does that refer to the body or the soul? So Prabhupada says, the defects are there in the living being when he's acting on the material platform. As stated in Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, verse 16, Dvabhimo purusho loke saras chaksare vacha sara sarvani bhutani kutistok sara uchate. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every entity is called infallible. So the defects are there only on the material platform. One who is acting in Krishna consciousness is beyond those defects. So you can see, so even Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, everybody in the material world is fallible. Only Krishna is infallible. But if we act in Krishna consciousness, then we're beyond those defects. So then his last question, Srila Prabhupada answers. He says, how is the soul degraded by lust, anger, and greed when it is transcendental to the body? So that's the question. Oh yeah, this is still a question. Doesn't that imply that the soul has changed? So that's the question. So Prabhupada answers, no, the soul never changes, but due to his tininess, he may become forgetful of his relationship with Krishna. The spiritual quality of the spiritual spark has not changed, but he has forgotten his spiritual nature. bewildered by the imperfect desire to become equal or greater than Krishna. So just see, that's how we become degraded. The soul becomes degraded. But the soul doesn't change. Actually, it never changes, as Prabhupada mentions by Bhagavad Gita. I mean, you can't even cut it. It doesn't change at all. But because it's very tiny, we will forget our relationship with Krishna. And that spark hasn't changed, but he's forgotten his spiritual nature, which is to be a servant of Krishna. Because he had the desire, he was envious of Krishna in the spiritual world. He wanted to be equal or greater than Krishna. So therefore, Krishna made this arrangement. So here, our consciousness is there. We're absorbed in this material energy. So we have to bring that consciousness back to Krishna and his service. So as mentioned here, Prabhupada breaks up the purport into three significant purposes. First, he talks about Prithu. He brings up the last word, like there's Adhokshaja, there's Bhagavan Indra. He counts as one word, and then Prithu. So he talks about Prithu first, that yet, even though Prithu is an incarnation of Vishnu, he's still a devotee of Krishna. He's a great devotee of Krishna. And he's empowered, he's superhumanly empowered. And nonetheless, he's still a living entity. So therefore, he acts as a devotee of Krishna. So Prabhupada says that we should not, even though we're on this platform, we shouldn't forget our eternal relationship with Krishna. And this is, King Prithu did not forget that. So, but in Kali Yuga, we probably mentioned there's so many of these rascals, and they claim themselves to be the personality of Godhead. I mean, even in this day and age, we remember there was Jimi Hendrix. On one of his albums, I think he cut out the picture of Krishna. I think it was Vishnu, a painting or a picture. We had a Vishnu or he got, and he put his own picture there. And they brought that to Prabhupada's attention. And Prabhupada said, that is very bad. He is actually calling death very near. So not too long after that, he actually died in a hotel in London, where he actually choked on his own vomit and died. So this is not, you know, to think that we are God. It's such a stupid thing, you know. So here, and then he brings up the next word, Bhagavan Indra, which indicates that a living entity, even though you may be exalted, like Indra, he's considered to be like Bhagavan, even though he's an ordinary living entity. But still, as we mentioned from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that there everyone here is fallible. So we see Prabhupada says here that he has these four defects of the conditioned soul. So, and this is generally used, this word, Bhagavan, for Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here Indra has it because he has so much power in his hands. He's very powerful. And we'll see. But he becomes envious of Prithu Maharaj, who's an incarnation of God. So these defects of material life are so strong that, you know, people they actually become fallen, which is amazing. So, as you mentioned, those defects, what they are in this fallible plane that we're in, you know, we have a tendency to make mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we have a tendency to be illusion, and we have a tendency to cheat. So this is our nature in the material world. So, so this is the nice verse of the Bhagavad Gita 15:16, how it describes here. Prabhupada mentions there, the verse, there are two classes of beings, the fallible and infallible in the material world. Every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport there that the living entities are innumerable, and they can be divided into these two classes, which is the fallible and the infallible. And how we, again, we're separated parts and parcels of Krishna, but when we come in contact with the material world, we're called Jiva Bhuta. And that means that we are fallible. So, but those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called infallible. So oneness doesn't mean that we have no individuality, but that there is no disunity. So we're agreeable to the purpose of creation. So we're on the same mission, the same desire as Krishna. That means they're Krishna conscious. So in the material world, Prabhupada mentions in the purport that everybody undergoes these six changes of birth, growth, duration, reproduction, and then dwindling and vanishing. So those are the changes of the material body. But the spiritual world, the body doesn't change. There's none of these changes there. There we all exist in oneness with Krishna. But when we become in contact with matter, beginning from the first created being, even Lord Brahma, down to the ant, we're changing our bodies. Therefore, we're all fallible. But in the spiritual world, we're all liberated in oneness. It doesn't mean that we're homogenic, but we're all one, as we mentioned, in mission. With the purpose, we're agreeable. So, this is nicely described. So, as far as this fallen nature, Prabhupada mentions in a Rath Yatra address in San Francisco, the whole address was so wonderful. He was talking about the symptoms of human life, is that we should be pessimistic, you know, not optimistic of the mature world. He said, then your path of liberation, that will be there. Because if you think you'll be happy here, that's illusion, that's Maya, because nobody actually could be happy here. So he's saying that I request you, those of you who are feeling frustration, you're confused. He said that that's actually a good qualification. You know, in a sense it is, because when you're frustrated and confused here, you get disgusted with this materialistic way of life. And that's good. It's a good qualification for spiritual advancement. But if you're not properly guided, then that'll be another frustration. So he said, to save you from that frustration, this Krishna consciousness movement has come to your country. So he talks about Lord Chaitanya, how he's very, he comes to reclaim all the fallen souls. And he says how there is a great devotee, Narottama Das Thakur, he talks about him. And he quotes him that he said, but I am the most fallen, therefore my claim is first. So because you have advanced yourself to claim the fallen souls, then I am the most fallen, therefore you must take me first. So Prabhupada describes that, as Prabhupada mentions, as fallen. He mentions in the purport today. So he says, actually, who is fallen soul? Prabhupada says, fallen soul means anyone who's taken birth in this material world, he is a fallen soul. So just see, if we're in the material world, then we're fallen. So never mind what he is. He may be Brahma. He may be an insignificant ant. Anyone who is within this world, this material world, is fallen. So we're put in this awkward position. And because he said, actually, constitutionally we're joyful. As mentioned, we're, you know, full of knowledge, bliss, eternity. But when you come into the material world, you're encaged in this material body. So that way, this way, we're not joyful. So Prabhupada ends his talk here. He says, therefore, my request to you, those who are feeling frustration or confused, please take to this Maha Mantra chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So then he encourages him that way. So, yeah, Prabhupada mentions also in the Journey of Self-Discovery, he talks about how this chanting, if you chant it, it will actually deliver all fallen souls without a doubt, and that it's not bogus propaganda. And whatever you've done, you know, in your past life or whatever, you know, if you take to this process, then you become saintly, you'll become pure, a Krishna conscious person. So that was nicely described. So here, and there's another lecture where Prabhupada brings up this point, as we mentioned, about face to face. And he probably mentions in a lecture, a Bhagavad Gita lecture that was given in chapter 2 and verses 19 to 25. And he says there, in one of his, I just took one little paragraph. And he says, just like we're sitting face to face, Krishna's like that. You can have the opportunity. Just like Arjuna had the opportunity. Similarly, you have the opportunity. If you have to take the opportunity. You'll see Krishna face to face, talk with him face to face, play with him face to face. It's so nice. Krishna consciousness. Yes. So in another lecture on the same topic that Srila Prabhupada gave on the Srimad Bhagavatam, this was the 9th canto, chapter 9 in Montreal. This was in 1968. And Prabhupada said, it's not very difficult to arrange a meeting with somebody great like a president. So you just simply have to make arrangements. So similarly, he says, you can meet God face to face, just as we're meeting here face to face. Simply, you have to make arrangement, that's all. And this arrangement is Krishna consciousness. So if you make this arrangement complete, then you will see God face to face. Not only that you will see God face to face after this life, no. Even in this life also, you will see God face to face. Wow. Then he quotes the Paramasamhita 538 Premanjana Charita. And what is that qualification? The qualification is love. Simply you are loving so many things that is not giving you satisfaction. You try to develop your love, which is already dormant in you. And when you are efficient in loving God, you will see God face to face. So this is what he's talking about here. So if you have this love, then you'll see Krishna everywhere. And you look at a tree, you see Krishna, you see anything, he said, even a bus, you see Krishna. So this, we have to come to this prema. Your spirit, he said, is this loving spirit is developed like the full moon. When the full moon night, you can visualize the whole city. So similarly, by raising yourself to the platform of loving service to Krishna, you'll see God face to face. So that's so wonderful, isn't it? To see God like that. So I was thinking how now there's so many, like, people are talking about this heart center and so many different things. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But here's another one that I want to talk about. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. And this is very nicely described here, how Krishna's present. He says, this is the verse. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is a Paramatma, super soul, in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So Krishna's there. I mean, he's present in the form of his transcendental sound. So this is how we see in this age. This is how we'll see Krishna. Prabhupada says in the purport, the Lord is so kind to us that he can be present before us personally in the form of transcendental sound. But unfortunately, we have no taste for hearing and glorifying the Lord's name and activities. So we have to develop a taste for hearing and chanting this holy sound. And this is through the medium service of the pure devotee. So this is what Prabhupada was telling at the Rath Yatra address, that, you know, you're frustrated now, but you need guidance. And this is what the pure devotee comes and gives that guidance so that we can get this taste for the Lord. So as I mentioned, there's a very interesting thing going on now where they talk about, I don't know if you've heard of this heart math. They talk about this care focus to replace fear with managed concern. And so they talk about how, you know, they have these different tools like meditation tools, that if you just breathe in a relaxed pace and you pretend you're breathing through your heart or your chest area and imagine calming your mind and emotions with each breath. So they say by doing this, you create space and it enables intuitive access for clear discernment and the choices when you evaluate situations. So they're giving this meditation. They're encouraging it for people to get free from their anxiety and stresses, especially now with this pandemic that we're experiencing. So they say as you breathe, you visualize mental, emotional calm, poise streaming into your mind and all your cells. So you hold your conscious intention in your heart to change feelings of anxiety or fear into feelings of managed concern. So they claim that this will increase your capacity for maintaining care and compassion for humanity's challenges without creating burnout in your own system. So that's a good point. We have to take care of ourselves before we take care of others. Prabhupada said that we should, you know, always be concerned about saving the conditioned souls, but first, save yourself. So anyway, they're trying to get a way of reducing fear So then they have this meditation where you want to radiate compassion and care and ease to the global energetic field. So what they're doing is they have certain times during the day where they could try to get everybody all over the world to meditate in this way to try to send out this compassion. So I was thinking how, wow, what a like a, you know, it's, we have such a meditation that just makes this look like so, of course, impersonal as we can see it, and so like just, you know, insignificant is the only word I could think of. But I just happened to be reading this book, very wonderful book, by Satchinandana Swami, which is called The Living Name. And as we mentioned, how we have to have this taste for chanting and Krishna will appear for, to us. So it's a guide for chanting with absorption by Satchinandana Swami. So he talks about these five really powerful practices, and I guess this book is based on his seminars, on the Holy Name seminars and chanting and stuff like that, japa seminars and things like that. So he talks about, just like we have five life airs in the body, you know, they're very powerful. So he said these five practices in his book that he's gleaned through, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's teachings and from different, you know, scriptures. And it's about how to align the body, you know, first, you know, how we should make the body erect and sit properly, like Prabhupada always says, you know, sit properly, and how to get the mind from getting distracted in this age of distraction, and the heart to, over, you know, to open it up for Krishna. This is Prabhupada says, as you mentioned, that by love, you know, this is how we will be able to see Krishna. When we love him, you'll be able to see Krishna. So his whole book is about that. And it's very nicely described in the book. And he has some really nice quotes in there. So, which is churned from all kinds of teachings of great acharyas, from the shastras, and the experience of exalted sadhus. So he's hoping that if you take this to heart, that he will access, will be able to access the Lord in his holy name. So there's one quote here that he quotes in the book. Srila Prabhupada told a guest, just like Prabhupada mentioned in this Rath Yatra address. He said, "I've not come to teach you philosophy. I've come simply to ask you to chant. Purify your consciousness and realize your spiritual position." He seemed to indicate that one can come quite quickly to this level. So Srila Prabhupada is encouraging us, you know, you come, do this. And then he quotes a nice quote from the, I'm just taking different parts and different quotes that kind of relate. So this is not like in any order in the book, but anyway, he has this nice quote from the Nectar Devotion, chapter 12. He says here, "For persons who are not inclined to clean the dust from their hearts and who want to keep things as they are, it is not possible to derive the transcendental result of chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. One should therefore be encouraged to develop this service attitude toward the Lord, because that will help him to chant without any offense." So he talks about this actually in the book too, this service attitude. And this is what happened in this pastime we're having between Mars Prithu and Mother Earth. He became so angry with her that he was going to kill her because she wasn't performing her duty properly. And she came up with some solutions and wanted to properly serve, and she did. And at that point, you know, she was lovingly serving Maharaj Prithu, and Maharaj Prithu actually loved her back and as and accepted her as his daughter. So this service is very important that we have to serve. So here's a couple prayers that he says here, that to just to open our heart in the mood in these prayers is one way before you chant, like say these wonderful prayers to open your heart. You know, so he talks about a lot of techniques, how to sit properly and how to control the mind and different things, which is, you know, I would recommend checking out the book. It's really, really nice. These are like techniques, not like, you know, to replace for chanting, but to actually assist chanting. And then once you get, once they help you like a, you know, a lever, then you just, you know, you're there. You don't have to be so attached to those, you know, techniques. So here's one nice prayer. "Oh, Sri Harinam, you manifest in many forms, like Agadamanya, to subdue the Aga demon, Yasodananda, the son of Yasoda, Nandasuna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Kamalayana, the lotus-eyed, Gopichandra, the moon of the gopis, Vrindavane, Vrindavanendra, the Lord of Vrindavan. Pranatakaruma, the compassionate master of the surrendered souls. And Krishna. O holy name, let my attachment for you increase more and more. Or simply we could just chant, my dear Radha, my dear Krishna, please accept me in your service. So this is so important. And he has so many nice, wonderful prayers that we should actually open the heart, because the heart is more than just the material heart that pumps blood. We also have an emotional heart, you know, which is the residence of our feelings, like friendship, community, happiness, integrity, love, inner peace. Even pain and loss is there. But there's actually a third heart, and that's the one we often overlook, and that's the most important, and that's the spiritual heart. And that's our true eternal self. That's where it resides, in that heart. So, in excuse me. So, this heart in our daily activities and, you know, in the material world, it gets covered. And when it's covered, it's like it's lost. So this is that heart we have to revive. And with that, whenever we make that healthy heart, you know, revive that, then our spiritual life will flourish. So unless we awaken that healthy spiritual heart, then we're like, it's almost like being spiritually dead. So how can we locate and revive that heart? That's how we have to enter into this devotional relationship with Krishna. So this third heart, it's built to express and experience love in spiritual relationships that are being actively nourished. So we see relationships in the material world. What are they based on? Envy. Just like we see Indra. He is very attached. He has some very attached, you know, attachments in the material world. You know, he's fallible because he has a mature body, even though it's very advanced. But yet still, he can be overcome by these tendencies of the mature world. Envy, lust, you know, greed, these things. So instead of serving Maharaj Prithu and being happy for his advancements and trying to say, oh, look, he's serving Krishna so nicely, let me, you know, he may be envious, like a spiritual envy. Okay, well, I'm going to even do better than that. I want to get Krishna's attention too. But instead, no, he becomes envious and he actually steals and is creating violence. And it influences. And what do they want to do? They want to kill Lord Indra, you know, just for stealing the horse. I mean, is that the solution? You know, someone's stealing from me, so let me just kill him. You know, so it's like, you know, so it starts a whole, like, chain reaction of things happening, just like today in our society. Everyone is so envious. You know, people are murdering people, you know, doing so many different things, stealing, so much politicking, just enviousness. So instead, we should develop spiritual relationships and actually develop loving relationships and just actually glorify and appreciate devotees instead of like becoming envious. Oh, you know, you're so good at this. You know, you must be puffed up. No, we say, hey, you're so good at playing the harmonium. You know, I should, you know, it's so nice. And then that way you can learn. Maybe you'll be blessed. Instead of saying, oh, instead of criticizing, oh, you're so puffed up. And that way you never learn how to play the harmonium or the mridanga or whatever it is. So we have to develop these loving relationships with devotees. And this is what the spiritual master comes, starts a society, a family of devotees where we can serve each other. And how do we serve each other? We're chanting, dancing, and feasting. Unfortunately, now it's hard to get together now because we're all practicing social distancing. So, but yeah, the social distancing is keeping us away from that. But we could still do that at home, you know, between with our own deities, glorify them, chant and dance. You know, you could chant 24 hours a day, Sri Prabhupada said. You know, you could. And as you're walking, as you're working, so many different things. So we have to do that 24 hours a day. So this is our process. Otherwise, the heart, you know, is not going to be open, even when we chant japa or kirtan. So we have to beg the divine for service. And the service is so nice. We serve the devotees, we serve the spiritual master, we serve the deities, and we have so many ways of serving the devotees to get special advancement of just absorbing, like chanting, dancing, and feasting. We have feasting, we have prasadam in so many forms. Prasadam, and the eyes can feast on the beautiful forms of the deities. You know, the ears can feast, drink the nectar of the holy names. And our tongues can enjoy the wonderful, sweet, holy names and the wonderful taste of Krishna prasadam. So this is our process. So there's another nice prayer that he quotes in the book about a devotee. He's begging for such these devotional feelings. And he's saying, he's quoting here, "Just as young men desire young ladies, and young ladies desire young men, my dear Lord, may my mind be attracted to you." So this is the way we want to express and get rid of our old karmic, you know, contaminated impressions and desires, you know, that enter our heart. So we have to clear that passageway to the temple. In the book, it's nicely describes how there's different when you go to the temple. Temples in India, there's like three gates you have to go through, which is like, you know, the physical, mental, the heart gate. But yet when you get to that gate, where Krishna, the deity doors, they don't open from the outside. You can't force them open. They have to open from the inside. And that's Krishna when he desires, when he likes, when he wants, at his own sweet will, he'll open the door to our heart. If we just have patience and serve Krishna with a loving mood and our heart is open. And Krishna will say, he says here that if we follow this path, then Krishna will immediately become attentive. And he'll say, "Oh, here's someone calling out to me. I must adopt him under my care. He is now mine." Just like Prithu Maharaj gave that example with Mother Earth. He accepted her as his daughter. She is mine now. So in the same way, Krishna will see us. So Krishna will respond when we call him with our hearts wide open. And if our hearts are closed before chanting, even then, if we just, you know, chant the best we can, follow these really wonderful techniques he gives in this book, then we'll open our spiritual heart and we'll be able to really take advantage and, you know, develop and get free from all this enviousness and things like that. So there's an interesting thing that kind of, how we can look at the situation now, how sometimes, actually there was a really wonderful class was given by Devamrita Swami. So we don't have Srimad Bhagavatam classes anymore. So, you know, just to kind of keep the social distancing, I guess it's better to be safe than sorry. So we're playing different classes that were given, you know, in the past, like, you know, different devotees. So this last class, I think it was yesterday, was given by Devamrita Swami. And he was talking about how Srila Prabhupada was saying that Hari Katha is not just kirtan. But he said actually Hari Katha is considered kirtan and also discussing the futility of material life. So again, Prabhupada's mentioned in his address to the Rath Yatra, he's saying how you're frustrated, you know, this, it's a good qualification, you know, to see how this futility of material life, you know, has been, it's like a boost for us to be dissatisfied here and to actually advance. So he's discussing, so we discussed that. So he was mentioning how material activities, when you perform material activities, what happens? You get anxiety. It's not like you perform material activities and then you're going to think you're going to be happy. But Devamrita Swami was bringing this home very, very, you know, which could you say, very point, bring this point very clearly, that material activities and anxiety are one package. It's not like, you know, they're separate. When you plan for material activities, there's going to be anxiety and problems. That's when they begin. You see? So we have to see what kind of influence we want to be under. We want to be under the influence of the material energy or the positive spiritual energy. So we have to apply our spiritual technology which is really, we bring this point home of this book, The Living Name, by Satchinandana Swami. He talks about this, so it's very nice. So we can get this wisdom and this experience. And he's talking about how this anxiety today is amongst the 18 to 35-year-olds mostly, actually, today. They're in anxiety about their study, about what kind of jobs they're going to get, about their relationships, about their loans they're getting, where they're going to live, you know, all these things. So he's mentioned how we could use these problems to increase our surrender to Krishna, to cross the ocean on this most suitable boat of the chanting of the holy names. And as Prabhupada mentions, we can experience, just as Arjuna has seen Krishna face to face, or as Narada Muni even, you know, he says we can experience these things. And he was bringing about this point of how Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was singing this song, I forget the name, of how he was saying, I see my home is transformed into Goloka. So that way. So in this way, we have to, instead of enviousness, we have to appreciate. We have to associate with the devotees very nicely, you know, and appreciate them. They help push us ahead. You know, they give us that faith. It deepens that faith. And then, you know, we will be able to distinguish properly between material and spiritual affairs instead of being disoriented and going out bewildered of what's happening. So as I mentioned, there's an interesting astrologer who was talking about how the situation we're in now, you know, in this world. And he was saying how Pluto is actually at 0 degrees right now. And Pluto, it represents death. It actually represents destruction, war, but it also represents renewal, rebirth, and reset. It represents change, transformation. And he was talking about, it's like a, you'll see it on YouTube, this one astrologer, I don't know, I didn't get the thing on it here, but anyway, there's many different astrological things on this one, but this one I found very interesting. And then he was going into history, how when they had the Spanish flu, you know, how it was, you know, because Pluto was in a certain place, and when the AIDS became really, really prominent, you know, Pluto was like in Libra, you know, the planet of love, and when there was war, independent war, was when Pluto was in Capricorn, and now what happens now is when Pluto is in Capricorn now, 0 degrees, but it's more mild than when Pluto's in like Aries, like a warlike position. So he's saying that this Pluto in Capricorn now is going to last 8 to 10 months. So we're going to experience this till about June or July. And he was bringing up this point about how, you know, people are so afraid. It's like, you know, it's like a warlike situation. You know, but it's not like we're experiencing so much death. It's not like we're being bombed. But it's almost like we are, because like there's nobody in the streets. You know, we're everybody's staying home, afraid, fearful. It's almost like a war. So he says here that he's saying that people, that he mentioned here, you're not going to die unless your time has come, right? You know, it's actually in your chart. How are you going to die? And there's going to be certain situations. But he said the mortality rate that they're saying is only like 0.1% of this coronavirus. But it's actually a fraction compared to the 15 million people that die per year. And he had this whole chart about how just from cardiovascular diseases, and this was just in the year 2017, the number of deaths, it was 17.79 million. Cancers was 9.56 million. And so many different things like that. Suicides was 793,000. So just so many things you could see. It came, so this is like over 60, you know, it's like so big, you know, like so many people are dying every year. So how, you know, he's trying to bring the point that, you know, like don't be so afraid to die. You're going to die when you're going to die. But actually, he's saying how, but where's the point he said here, that Pluto acts like a stern father, that he wants you to get back to your roots and to behave properly. So he's saying that there will actually be less deaths in this chart during this time. And that's not killing us by wars, but killing us like quarantines. You know, we're scared. Businesses are collapsing. We're losing our money. We're losing our income. So this is actually bigger than death itself, practically. So Pluto's already doing its job. So that's why death's not going to be so huge, he said, because we're dying of all these other diseases. So, and these are all actually higher than the coronavirus. But he said, what's the benefits? It's like we're getting reset. You notice, like in China, they said that the first time ever, when they had all the factories closed, they got to see the blue skies. So everywhere now, there's cleaner roads, cleaner water, the air is cleaner, the environment, you know. And so they're finding that people can work from home, you know, from remote areas, and they can still be productive, you know, that there's lesser costs and better lifestyles. People can spend more time with their family. You know, there's more like a work-life balance. You know, people can move to greener areas. And actually, all these diseases that are, he mentioned, these 17 million diseases, you know, is all due to this stressful lifestyle. So this is what Pluto's doing, is resetting the economy, you know. And then once it's reset, you know, then markets will surge back when this is all over. It'll come into something beautiful. So there's more benefit than harm. And so that's the good news from Corona, from the coronavirus. But he said the bad news is that many people will just continue to die from these list of diseases that he mentioned. I mean, he lists so many diseases. There's like tons of them. It's like a whole chart, huge, he mentions. And natural disasters included, like so many things. So yes, this is one good point that we have to go back to our roots. And that way we can actually reset, reboot, and understand. Just like Prithu Maharaj, in the same way. He was a stern father for Mother Earth. He wanted her to get back to her roots, provide the roots, you know, to reset, do things properly. And then once we do that, then we, you know, we can reset. I mean, isn't there a golden age coming? I mean, is this helping? I mean, are all these, you know, Pluto is a living entity, right? Is he a servant of Krishna in some way to help in this society to bring this point across? So we have to chant. So we want to chant this Hare Krishna. As you mentioned, we take nice prasadam. We control our senses, you know, associate with the devotees properly, take prasadam. And in that way, you know, we'll have a pure heart. Just like when we see the pastime when in the womb of Devaki, the six sons of Marichi, which represents the mind. And who were these six sons? They were the rebellious tendencies of the mind, the demoniac propensities of the mind, kama, krodha, loba, moha, mada, matsarya. So this is the lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion. About Devaki's womb, it represented bhakti or devotion. So pure bhakti is without any of these tendencies of these six enemies. So Krishna is not going to appear in the womb of such a devotee. So these devotees, so we see that these we have to conquer these six enemies. So that's why these enemies had to be killed. I mean, the whole story about, you know, who they were and what happened and all these things, we don't have time for that story, but just the point is that these six enemies had to be killed, you know, before Krishna could enter into the womb. It had to become fit for Krishna to appear. And when Balaram appeared in her womb, he made it very comfortable and suitable place for Krishna to appear. And this is where Balaram represents the Guru. And this is what Srila Prabhupada was saying, that you need guidance in his Ratha Yatra address. You need someone to guide you. So the spiritual master, he teaches us how to kill these six enemies of lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion. So even though they may be extinguished, we require help from the spiritual master to prepare the mind, to prepare our consciousness in such a way that is pleasing place for Krishna to appear. So this is how we can see Krishna face to face. So this is the purpose of any of our sadhana, any of our rituals, any of our techniques, is to become pure. That's the real process. That's the purpose of any ritual or any jagya or any sacrifices we perform, is to become pure. So we could see as Preetra Maharaj is performing his sacrifice, you know, he was just trying to please and do his duty, you know, so that he could maintain his position and to serve the citizens like a father and to help them, you know, become advanced spiritually so that he can, you know, help the citizens. And he's seeing that this is the process, was to become purified. In fact, he was doing it in such a way just to please Krishna. He wasn't just doing it so as known as 100 sacrifices. In fact, he only accepted 99 because he didn't want to compete with Indra, because Indra was becoming so upset and so envious that he said, okay, this is fine. It's not a big deal. You know, just 99 is very nice. So we have this simple process. We're chanting, we're dancing, feasting, just take nice prasadam, just nourish this prasadam, and gradually, you know, the prasadam of these things I mentioned, you know, seeing, you know, tasting prasadam up through the tongue, tasting the holy names, you know, like that prayer, I wish I had thousands of names, millions of you, you know, to hear the chant the holy names. So we become sanctified, a place for Krishna to appear. And then we could see him face to face, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned in this purport. So I'd like to end with a nice poem that Satchinanda Swami wrote in his book. And he says here, "When will I feel your name pulsating with life, like that young bird who once flew into my open palms?" So you see, like a bird's always like looking here and looking there. "When will your name taste like cream, yogurt, and ice mixed together on my thirsty tongue, exhausted from the tastes of this world?" So this is how we have to become free from this material consciousness. So then he cut his last little poem. "When will I stop offering you broken names because my love is still divided between you and the world?" So this is whole book is about. It's so nice. I think his poem really summarizes his book very nicely, because it's showing us how to actually give Krishna pure names, not broken names, not divided names, not inattentive chanting. Like he uses a nice example in the book, a nice graphic of it, the word chant, like he just scribbles chant, and then the word gets more clearer, chant, and then it very nicely written chant. So this is how we should chant, very nicely, very wonderfully, in such a way that we open our hearts for Krishna. Because we want this adhokshaja, this thing that's unseen. Krishna is unseen, but he's yet so powerful. Just see one little tiny speck of Krishna, just a little virus, unseen, has so much power. It's a world pandemic. But just see this unseen thing of Krishna, this adhokshaja of Krishna. You know, it's unseen, it's so powerful that we can actually see that, even though it's beyond our senses, beyond our mind. We can actually, Krishna will reveal himself to us. So I'd like to end there and open it up for any questions, comments, or realizations.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Maharaj. Go ahead. Go.
Thank you. The Rathyatra address where Prabhupada said, "I haven't come to teach you philosophy, I've come to get you to chant Hare Krishna." Can you tell me what date, what year that was? Because I'd love to be able to source that.
No, it's beautiful, yeah. It's Rathyatra address in San Francisco, July 1970.
July 1970. Thank you for that. And it was a wonderful, sure. I appreciated the class.
Oh, I wish I could read the whole thing. It's so nice. It's very short, actually, but it's so potent and powerful.
Well, we can find it, right?
Okay. Definitely. You'll find it on Vedabase. That's where I got it.
Haribo, thank you. Hare Krishna.
You're welome. Hare Krishna.
Guruji, a couple of times you mentioned, great class, by the way. A couple of
thank
times you,
Prabhu.
You mentioned something really important, and that is the defects that we have. You talked about how Krishna...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we he's at Holstajo. We can't see him. We have these four defects. Now, I could certainly take out a pen and paper and write down 1, 2, 3, 4 and list those four defects. But the reality is I'm plagued with them. And, it's not just a matter of memorizing them, but realizing them. And one way to realize them is you know, to hear them in association of devotees. So I wonder if you'd be kind enough to explain what are those four defects and your any realizations you have in that regard. Because just by hearing you speak of the four defects, it will help us to overcome them. So whatever, you know, just to hear them, just list them for us. Oh, it's always great to hear them, because just by hearing, the key is there to become freed from them. Or any additional points you want to make with regard to your realizations of them. Because that's really, really important. We're plagued by them. We don't think of it. We don't. Again, we could all get it right on a quiz. Do we have defects? Yes. What are they? And we probably, almost all of us could list those four defects. But we forget 99.999% of the time that we have them.
Yeah,
and we don't realize we have them.
Yeah, that's the proof that we're fallible. So they're called the dosha chatushtani, the four faults. The Prabhupada mentions them a different way. He says mistake, illusion, cheating, and imperfection. So this is the struggle for existence, he said. One mistake after one mistake. That's what we're doing. We're making mistakes after mistake. One illusion after another one. One imperfection after another. So like that, it's going on. This is a struggle for existence. So just see, so not only we're making mistakes, and we have a tendency to be illusion, and we have a tendency to cheat, but again and again, one after another, we're cheating, we're fixing. You know, so these things are happening again and again and again. So so Prabhupada mentions that how, you know, this is the conditioned state. And it's that letter that he wrote to Chaturbhuja was so powerful. All these questions are so nice. I wish I could read all of the questions. Prabhupada answers them all, which is so nice. And it just brings about how we're existing in this cage, and how, you know, this, so how we're an illusion, and how we become conditioned with the four defects. So he mentions there that the defects are there in the living being when he's acting on the material platform. Mm-hmm. And that's when he talks about the fallible and infallible in the material world. So we're all called infallible. These are the defects on the material platform. And then
when you mentioned cheating, that we have this tendency to cheat, a bell went off in my brain that I guess I never thought about it before. Not only do we have the imperfection of cheating others, we're constantly cheating ourselves. Our mind is such a rascal that we have to be so aware of that mind, because we're cheating our own selves all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're actually cheating ourselves. We're the worst cheaters. We're the worst. Yeah. We're becoming the most. So as Papa mentions, we're fallen. So who's fallen? How do you recognize someone who's fallen? Anybody in the material world. Even Lord Brahma to the ant, Prabhupada says. We're all fallible. We're all fallen. Just because you have a material body, you're fallen. Isn't that amazing? So this is what's happening. So because of envy, we're here. Due to the envy of the Lord, a desire to be like him, you know, instead of being with him and serving him in the spiritual world, you know, we want to be like him and imitate him. So,
nice.
But if we have that open mind and we're willing to give up this envy and accept the path of devotion and open our hearts and, you know, associate with devotees, then Krishna reveals this path of love. And that's a secret even given in the Gita, that, you know, this spell of illusion, one tries to be happy by serving his personal sense gratification. But we see how it doesn't make us happy, like Devamrita Swami said, by taking sense, you know, engaging in material activities, it's comes with it. It's a package that you will not be happy, and you'll experience, you know, anxieties and so many different things. Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
But the Gita is always, in the Gita, it's always bringing it back to the devotional point, that we have to perform devotional service. That's the most important point, you see. So yeah. So being envy, there's a very nice lecture given by Chaitanya Charan. If you go to his Gita Daily, look at that one thing he gave. Envy targets the envied, but torments the envious. You see?
Say that again slowly. Went over my head.
Envy targets the envied, right? So I'm envious of you, so I'm going to target you like Indra was targeting Prithumaras. But it torments the envious. He talks to it's a very nice, they're very short articles that he writes. And talks about this envy and how it actually makes us miserable at other success. But it actually drags you down. You know, not only are you plotting their destruction, but it drags you down. Just like he quotes Duryodhana. You know, he envied the Pandavas, their royal position. You know, he envied Bhima's physical power, Arjuna's archery. So he conspired repeatedly to humiliate them. But, you know, it actually, even though he was able to get the things he wanted, he wasn't satisfied. You see, still wasn't satisfied.
Chaitanya Charan's really, really witty. I was wondering, is he okay? I've noticed, because I love listening to his Gita dailies, and he used to have a video of himself. They're like, you could either download, like, what would you call the podcast?
Yeah.
Or you could watch the video. But I've noticed over probably the last 6 months, there's you can download the audio, but when you play what would normally be the video, there isn't a video of himself anymore, and I notice his voice has become a lot weaker.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I mostly just read, but yeah, I notice there are videos, but
not anymore.
Oh, I'm not sure. That'd be nice to find out.
I was wondering if he was. I wrote a note in the Gita Daily thing to them, you know, well, he probably has a whole team, you know, asking, you know, is Chaitanya Charan okay? And anything I could do to help if it isn't, but I never heard back from them.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure.
He's such a sweetheart. He's really a sweet devotee.
Yeah.
He stayed with me for a couple of days while he was here in Hawaii.
Oh, he did. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, he comes.
Oh, it was one of the temple. I guess the temple. I don't know. They didn't know him very well or something. They didn't have room for him, so the temple called me up. They say, Narhari, is there any chance Chaitanya Charan could stay with you? I've never met him, but I've listened to his talks. I said, can he stay with me? He can live with me. You know, sure, send him. Then we just became instant friends. Like, you know, it's probably like Radhanath. You know, anybody who meets Radhanath Maharaj, you know, you're like instantly, instant sweet. It was the same with him. It was just like we became instant buddies. We stayed up late into the night, which I never do, just talking and just having a wonderful time. He's incredible.
Yeah.
It was one of my all-time high experiences in all my years as being a devotee was the...
Wow.
Couple of days I spent with him. It's just so advanced. So just being with him was so enlivening.
Yeah. He's a genius, man. Wonderful.
He's a genius, yeah. Yeah, he's wonderful. Really wonderful.
So cool.
I just hope he's okay.
Makes me think about how fortunate we are. At least, I mean, I'm so grateful. We're all so fortunate for any relationship, any loving relationship we have with even Cody. Or just speaking more than one devotee, but I was in a class once and someone asked, what's the worst thing that could happen to someone? And I thought, well, that sounds like losing the association of devotee. And matter of fact, they said, yes, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita somewhere, that's the greatest pain is losing the association of a devotee.
Yeah.
And how fortunate we are for any association we have.
Oh, you know what Prabhupada said in that same Ratyatra address? I have to read this to you because this is really nice. This is one of the paragraphs. He says, this Krishna consciousness movement is the essence or cream of all these Vedic literatures. Because he was talking about all the literatures previously in his talk there. And he was talking, you know, how the cream, the Vedas and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he says, this movement is the cream. And then it says, in Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that Vedascha Sarvahameva Vedyo. By studying all the Vedic literatures, you will have to find out Krishna. And Krishna is so kind, rather, Krishna's incarnation, Lord Chaitanya, is so kind that he's given you Krishna in the form of his name, Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar. So this Krishna, Hare Krishna movement, practically, you can see also Krishna. This name Krishna and the original Supreme Personality of Krishna is non-different. If you simply chant this Hare Krishna mantra, then you're associating constantly with Krishna. That is a fact.
Mm.
Wow. So, is that
so
nice?
You know how, I'm sure most of you have heard about, now there's a more common knowledge of that whatever one thinks about or meditates on, they attract themselves
yes.
to it or attract to themselves.
Yes.
I mean, people, you know, you've got like actors and athletes, they all give inspirational talks about how they visualized, you know, getting the or whatever. So Bhagavad Gita 18:65, Krishna is saying, think of me, become my devotee, offer your homage to me, and I promise you that you're going to come to me because you're my very dear friend. And there's two parts to that. But I was thinking about Prabhupada, what you were just saying made me think of that, because you were saying on Prabhupada, this is the cream, this Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada gave us everything that we need practically to remember and think of Krishna. The deities, relationships with devotees, the morning program, everything we have that we do, because Prabhupada gave it to us, reminds us of Krishna all day long. So therefore, it's easy to understand. I think when I first heard that verse, I didn't really, I mean, I believed it, because Krishna is saying he promises it, but I didn't really understand it until I kind of went, oh, yeah, like whatever we think about, it's what happens to us. I mean, I see it again and again in my life. Whatever I meditate on, I may not be asking for, but all of a sudden it appears.
Yeah, we have the greatest form of meditation. That's why I was comparing this heart map, you know, a website that they're giving this, you know, kind of an impersonal meditation to open your heart and things like that. We have the perfect meditation, you know,
mm.
you know, through this process. So, so nice. Mm. Can I read you one more prayer that he recommends in his book for Open the Heart?
Please.
This is also like one of the steps he calls the book of opening the heart when you're chanting. As how we should chant Hare Krishna. O Master, O Radha, I am yours. O Beloved of Lord Krishna, I am yours. I offer to both of you my thoughts, words, and deeds. You two are the goal of my life. O Sri Sri Radha Krishna, you are like two great oceans of mercy. Please be merciful to me. I take shelter in you. I surrender to you. Please engage me, a sinner and offender, in your service. So see, that's that mood, the service mood, you know, that we want to, in that way, surrender. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other comments, questions, realizations?
Are we going to meet on Sunday, Ramananda Prabhu? Any thoughts on that?
We can ask the devotees what they think about doing such a thing. We can put some feelers out. Can't make a decision right now.
Okay. Maybe tomorrow.
I always miss class on Sunday. I'd be game. But I guess the logistics get a little tricky. You know, what time of day are we going to do it? Would it be like later when we normally have the feast, or would it be in the morning, in lieu of regular morning time? Sounds like an interesting idea to me. But
I would definitely appreciate if it was, you know, not 2:00 in the morning, my time. But whatever you do.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah, I just don't want to do anything capriciously on the spur of the moment, you know, because everybody's making a sacrifice to come like this, and they've made a commitment. So to just to add on another day, I just have to see what everybody thinks about that.
Sure.
Probably. I like the idea, but it's probably not a good idea. Mm. That's my off the I mean, I would love it, but I think for the whole Sangha to put Ramananda's already worked so hard. He really needs a day off where he just kind of doesn't have to worry about the Sangha.
Yeah, I guess.
And Ramananda's defense, give him a day off, and we'll see everybody back, you know, on Monday.
By the way,
we'll make it through.
So we're almost on Mayapur TV. I talked to Underdon, who's like in charge of that in Mayapur. They just finished the festival there, so we're almost there. We might be able to broadcast on Mayapur TV soon.
Wow, that's cool.
The way it's set up now is that it broadcasts your webcam and the microphone, you know, like a temple, but you know, it would only broadcast me. So that's not going to work. We've got to broadcast our sub-broadcast. So anyways, we're working on it, trying to figure out how to do it. Special thanks to Narahripu, and especially to Jai Jagadish, who really, really pushed me to make sure that we pursued this. We've been trying to do this over the last 2 years.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Really put a little bit of a fire under our butt to make sure it happens. So we're almost there.
Antardweep was real excited about it when I met with him in Mayapur. We spent hours together. He was trying to show me stuff, but I was saying, listen, I'm not a techie. You got to explain all this to Ramananda. But he really wants our Sangha on board on Mayapur TV.
Yeah, LA is on Mayapur TV. We have our live classes and programs.
We have a lot to offer the world, and we may get, who knows, we may get some other people joining us from seeing that. So anyway, I think it's great.
You know,
he definitely wants to do it. He wasn't just like placating. He really wants us, our Sangha, on board, part of Mayapur TV. So that'll be great when that happens, Ron.
Okay, thank you very much.
The devotees that want to listen to classes on Sunday, that's another idea. Just go to Mayapur TV. There's so many nice, you know, things you could get onto, or our ISKCON Desire Tree. There's a lot of nice classes you could listen to.
Yeah.
So,
think of all the unlimited classes of Prabhupada's that...
Yeah.
And there's a whole Prabhupada's class.
How many hundreds or thousands of Prabhupada classes are there? Go to G, you probably know that.
I think there's over 2,000. I'm not sure, more than that.
There's a YouTube channel that's just Prabhupada's stuff, like all of his lectures, all of his kirtans. I like to listen to both kirtans and lectures when it's quiet.
Sure. Jai.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. For your association.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, especially go to G.
Thank you.